through our study, and then we're going to come back to what we call the heart of the message. I'm sure most everyone is familiar with this text, but many times folks focus on Elijah, the man of God. Folks focus on the power of God, the healing power of God. Folks focus on different things in this passage, but there's something the Lord really impressed my heart with from this text, and we want to share it with you tonight as the Lord will allow. We're going to look at numerous things regarding the text. And then, like I say, we're going to come back and share the title of our message and what we want to be the main focus of our message towards the end, if the Lord allowed. 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master, and honorable because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto the Syrians. He was a mighty man of valor, but was a leper. Now, we see here right to start with, Syrians, they weren't a godly nation. They weren't a godly people. They weren't the Lord's people. But we see God's sovereign hand. We see God's working even in the godless nations, even in the pagan nations. They're not a power that exists on the earth today, but for the Lord. And the Lord allows, the Lord will use, and the Lord suffers many times. He don't promote wickedness from evil leaders and so forth, but He will nonetheless allow a power, allow someone to be in power, and will ultimately use it to fulfill His purpose. And we find that the Lord had allowed the Syrians here through Naaman to be quite victorious in their battles and to be free, be delivered from their enemy. Verse 2, and the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captives out of the land of Israel, a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. Oh, one little word of witness. We're going to say right here, don't ever look down on your personal testimony. Don't ever get frustrated that maybe when you talk to someone, you're not as relaxed or as fluid, or you can't remember all the scriptures you might like to remember, or so forth. Or maybe you talk to someone and you feel like you did a horrible job of trying to witness to them and so forth. Don't ever belittle your witness, because you never know what God's going to do with it. You know, never know where God's going to take it. Sometimes our worst witness, what we consider our worst witness, God will take it and make it the best. And this little maid just spoke up and said, oh, would my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, he would recover him of his leprosy. And one went in and told the Lord, saying, thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, go to now, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, now, when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy. Now, that's not what the little maid witnessed. The little maid didn't say the king of Israel could recover Naaman of his leprosy. He said, would God would allow Naaman to come to the prophet of God in Israel, in Samaria. He would recover him of his leprosy. But, as often happens, you know, as word gets passed along, it gets changed around a little. It gets, your translation gets to be a little bit different, just kind of like Zachary and watching the cartoon, you know. But the king was shocked. The king was in a terrible state. It says here in verse 7, and it came to pass when the king of Israel read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, am I God to kill and to make alive that this man does send unto me, or to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, he seeketh a quarrel against me. And it was so when Elijah, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. This was God's whole purpose in this. God was going to show that there was a man of God in Israel. God was going to show that He was the true and living God of Israel. God was going to show that He was the living God of all, that this man, leprosy, in this day and time, nowadays, it still isn't curable, but it's very controllable with medications and things. But back in this time, leprosy was just an absolute death sentence. There was just no two ways about it. If you had leprosy, you were going to go sooner or later, and a lot of times sooner. And so Elisha sent to the king and told him to, why have you rent your clothes? Let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet, there is a man of God in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariots, stood at the door of the house of Elisha. Oh, what a sight this must have been. You know, it's a lot like our days. Brother Mel is probably familiar with this, being in the military and being connected with the military and so forth. When a great ranking general or someone goes somewhere and so forth, they got the dress uniform and they got all their bars and all their ribbons and all their medals, and they're a pretty impressive sight. And I'm sure Naaman here and all his entourage and everything, it was a sight to behold. Pretty impressive, this man Naaman coming to the house of Elijah. Elijah didn't even get up and go to the door. I mean, Naaman, you know, he was used to being respected. Even the king of Syria considered him a great man. And he was used to people paying attention to him. He was used to people tripping over themselves to make nice with him, to impress him. And here he comes to the prophet's house, and Elijah don't even bother to get up and go to the door. And Elijah sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come unto thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth, and went away, and said, Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me, and stand, and call on the name of the Lord his God, and strike his hand over the place, and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. He wasn't just a little upset. He wasn't just a little ticked off. He turned and stormed off, and he was fuming. He was raging. Ah, he was hot. He was as mad as he could be. You know, we look at Naaman here. We see 3 things about Naaman that very, very well could have cost him experiencing the power, the blessing, the healing of the Lord that he needed. First of all, there was pride. Beloved, we can't come to God with pride in any way, shape, or form and expect to get anything from God. Pride, Bible tells us, God resisteth the proud, but he giveth grace unto the humble. Old Naaman was proud. He was puffed up. He came with his entourage. He came in all his regal garments of as a warrior and as a great warrior of Syria and so forth. And Elijah didn't even bother to come to the door and speak to him. He sent a messenger and said, Go and dip 7 times in the River Jordan and you'll be healed. You'll be cleansed. Naaman's pride was hurt. And he went away fuming. Oh, I tell you what. What has pride cost us in the course of our lives for the Lord? What is pride costing many of God's people today? We live in such a proudful, arrogant day. I've seen a commercial on television, and it just, the old saying goes, it gets my goat every time I see it. But it's a commercial from one of the big chemical companies. And basically what they say at the end of the commercial, that there's nothing that the human spirit and science can't take care of. Beloved, that nothing could be farther from the truth. Beloved, if we're going to get anything from God, we better come to Him humbly. We better come to Him meekly. Jesus said, "Learn, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls." What causes so much unrest in people's lives? What causes so much unrest in the Lord's churches? So oftentimes is plain old simple pride. People just think way, way, way too much of themselves. God help us. Second thing we see that almost cost Naaman the greatest blessing of his life is his preconceived notions. We all have them, don't we? We all go here, go there, we all experience life, we all maybe come and so forth. I've had people that I never met before and they get to know me and so forth and tell me, "Well, Brother Darrell, you're not anything like I thought you'd be." And sometimes I don't know whether that's good or bad, but I've had people say that. But we have preconceived notions. People have preconceived notions of what a pastor ought to be, how a pastor ought to act, what a pastor ought to do in any given situation. People have preconceived notions of what a church ought to be and, you know, how a church ought to be doing and so on like that. And if there's anything that can keep us from God's greatest blessing, it's our own preconceived ideas of things, our own preconceived notions. Naaman says here, in verse 11, "But Naaman was wroth and went away and he said, 'Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper.'" Beloved, most of the time our preconceived notions are actually the farthest things from the truth. We need to be careful that we don't let our preconceived notions keep us from experiencing God's greatest blessings. Then thirdly, and we all have these as well, Naaman's personal prejudice almost cost him God's greatest blessing. Look down here and verse 12, he says, "Are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Oh, Naaman's prejudice. Naaman's personal opinion. Oh, there's so much better waters. There's so much better rivers. There's, you know, I could go to these rivers up in Samaria and they're cleaner and they're prettier and they're nicer and the water quality is so much greater. Why can't I go up there? And what do I got to go get in that old muddy Jordan for? What do I got to go down to that Jordan? That Jordan isn't even that much of a river most of the time. Naaman almost let his preconceived notion of things rob him of the greatest blessing of his life. Beloved, it happens to us more often than we'd like to admit it. We get an idea in our head. We think this ought to be that way. We think this, you know, why can't I just, you know, do it my way? That's ultimately where we come from many times. Why can't we just do it our way? Why can't we just do it like we want? Why do we have to do it like the Lord said? Our preconceived notions, our prejudice, will keep God's greatest blessings from us. Old Naaman had some faithful servants. Look in verse 13. "And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, wash and be clean? You know, if Elijah had come out and addressed Naaman personally and showed his respect to Naaman's place, and he said, look, if you'll charge up this mountain and you'll wipe out 50 of the enemy and so forth all by your lonesome and everything, if you go ahead and do that, you'll be clean. Naaman probably would have took off and started looking for 50 enemies that he could do battle with and that he could overcome. But instead, Elisha gave him a very humble, simple task. Go dip 7 times in the River Jordan and you'll be clean. You know, it's said, between the great things we cannot do and the small things we will not do, the fear is we will do nothing at all. Let us never... It might be simple, it might be basic, it might be something that any child can do. But the Lord says, do it, beloved, let's do it. Let's do it, because the Lord says, do it. We don't have to understand it, we don't have to explain it, we don't have to think it's some great thing, but the Lord says, do it. Let's do it. And he humbled himself, verse 14, and he went down, and he dipped himself 7 times in Jordan according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came unto him again like the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. He was healed. Not only was he healed, but his flesh came back as a young child. It came back with that appearance and with, you know, that, you know, there's just something about a young child and the tone, the texture, their skin is just almost glowing sometimes with youth. You get up in your 60s and you look in the mirror in the morning and there's not a whole lot glowing, you know. And you get older and it doesn't get any better. Anyway, Naaman come up out of the Jordan, and his flesh was like that of a little child. Just as fresh and just as good and just as wonderful as it could be. And he went back and he wanted to reward Elisha, and Elisha wouldn't take it, wouldn't accept it. And Naaman recognized he'd experienced a great power of God. Look in verse 15. God always gets His purpose accomplished. God's purpose in all of this was to show emphatically, undeniably, absolutely that there was a true and living God in Israel and that He had a man that was His man in Israel, in Samaria. Verse 15, and he returned to the man of God, and he and all his company, and came and stood before him, said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing from thy servant. Oh, Naaman got the message. I believe the king of Syria, and I believe the king of Israel, I believe others got the message from this wonderful, miraculous healing that Naaman experienced. Now Naaman believed God. He trusted God. He recognized God. But he knew he had to go back. And he was still a servant of the king in a very pagan country. Notice what he says here. Notice the difference in nature. Notice the difference in attitude of Naaman. Verse 16. But as he said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules, burden of the earth, for thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods but the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master, the king, goeth into the... it says here, when my master, goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon. When I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant this thing. And he said unto him, Go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. Naaman knew he had to go back. He had to go back to a pagan king. He had to go back to idol worship. He had to go back and be amongst that again. And he knew the king, as before, would call upon him to go into this false house of worship. And Naaman said, I pray ye, pardon me. I know what's going to happen when I go back. I know I'm going to have to fulfill my duty, my obligation as the captain of the army of Samaria. And Elisha said, go in peace. We see a totally different man, don't we? We see a totally different attitude. Tell you what, when God gets a hold of you, when you humble yourself and God does for you, it'll change you. It'll change you. This idea, the modern day idea of salvation and so forth, that nothing changes, you just say a little prayer, you raise a hand, you sign a card, and you go on being the same old you always were. Something's wrong with that, isn't it? Something's not right with that. That's not the salvation I got. Probably any here who saved could testify, it's not the salvation you got. Naaman went back a changed man. He said, I might go through the motions, but in my heart, I only recognize the Lord. I only recognize the Lord. But then here we see old Gehazi. Greed gets old Gehazi. Verse 20, But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, Behold, my master has spared Naaman this Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought, but as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat from him. Beloved, how many times through the years have we seen greed get a hold of God's people? How many times have we seen greed of gain ruin lives, ruin families, ruin homes, ruin churches? Oh, sadly, America is a nation of great greed, and it's nothing but ruination unto us. Oh, Gehazi said, well, Elisha may not get anything, may not want anything, may not take anything, but I'm going to go get mine. And boy, he got it. He ran after old Naaman, and he lied to him, and he got some garments, he got some wealth, and he went and he stashed them away. Then he went in and tried to play before Elisha like nothing ever happened, like he didn't go anywhere. Look at what greed got old Gehazi. Look down at the end of this, verse 25. But he went and stood before his master, and Elisha said unto him, Whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, Thy servant went no whither. I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't done anything. Elisha knew. More importantly, God knew. Even if Gehazi could have got this by Elisha, he never would have got it by God. And he said unto him, Went not my heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money? Is it a time to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen, men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from the presence a leper as white as snow. And if there's any descendants of Gehazi in the world yet today, you know what? They've got leprosy. They got the curse of leprosy upon them. Ah, a lot of wonderful things to consider in this passage. But all these things are not the heart of the message. All these things that transpired. They transpired all because of a little me. Let's go back to the start of this. The title of our message is A Big Lesson from a Little Me. A big lesson from a little me. You know, we go through life, and all of us, we have some hard knocks. We have some valleys. We have discouragements. We have trials. We have tribulations. We go through things that if we had our way, we'd never go through them, would never experience them. We go through things and we honestly say, "Dear Lord, I hope I never have to go through that again." Here's this little maid, ripped away from her family, ripped away from all her loved ones, ripped away from everything she ever knew, ripped away from every dream and every hope of a normalcy of life. And she's carted away, she's carried away a captive. She's not the wife of Naaman's handmaid. She's not a slave of Naaman's house because she chose to be, because she wanted to be, because that was the dream of her life. She was a slave in the house of Naaman because the Syrians had come and ravaged her city and ravaged her home and carried her away. She may not have even known if her parents or family or loved ones were even alive when they carried her off. And here she is in this strange country. Here she is with no hope of freedom or following any dreams or desire of her own. Beloved, she's not bitter. She's not bitter. She's not mad at God. She's not wishing lightning and thunder and tornadoes and destruction come down upon Naaman and his house. Here she is, who'd been ripped away from everything she ever loved and everything she ever knew. And yet, she says in verse 3, and she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." What a testimony. What a great lesson for us to get tonight. Beloved, we go through valleys. We go through things. We go through things that, I mean, they cut to the depths of our soul. And I've seen people mad. I've seen people bitter. I've seen people storm off. I've seen people curse God. I've seen people say, "What's the use?" I've seen people say, "This didn't work out. That didn't work out. I've gone through this. I'm dealing with that." So forth. You know, what is the use of this trusting God? What is this use of following God? And people get all full of wretched bitterness and unbelief. Not this little maid. Not this little maid. Here she was, no hope at all of ever fulfilling any childhood dream that she ever might have had. Kids grow up and they dream, you know, a young lady might dream of meeting her Prince Charming and so forth and getting married and living in a nice home and having a wonderful relationship, and we have wonderful relationship with our families and so forth, and that's normal and that's what we ought to desire, and it's wonderful and it's a blessing. But if we were ripped away from that and forced bondage to be a slave in a foreign land, what would be our spirit? What would be? Would we be bitter? Would we throw aside, cast aside God and say, "Well, this thing of believing in God and trusting in God, it sure hasn't got me anywhere I wanted to be"? Oh, beloved, let's get this tonight. Bad things can happen, but they'll always happen for a reason. They'll always happen some way, shape, or form to fulfill the purpose of God. They'll always happen to us in some way that we may not understand for years. doesn't say exactly how long she'd been a captive. But she was a slave in Naaman's house. And instead of praying to God to send lightning bolts down and destroy Naaman and destroy, the enemies that carried away, she says, "Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, he would recover him of his leprosy." I don't know what you may have been through in your life to this point. You may have had some very hard and grievous blows. But beloved, God's still God. He's still on His throne. And there's nothing better that any of us can do than just keep on trusting Him. Keep on believing Him. Keep on being a witness for Him. The Bible warns us over and over about the terrible root of bitterness. The Bible warns us over and over about the evil heart of unbelief. There is nothing that I don't believe pleases the devil anymore than a broken down, bitter child of God over something that's happened in their life or something that's happened in their earthly experience that they can't let go or they can't get past or they can't just go on and believe God and serve God and rejoice in the Lord and live for Him. Oh, the big lesson from this little maid. All this wondrous working of God and Elisha and the healing of Naaman, it all started with a little maid who had never lost her faith, who never gave up on God, who never turned her back on God, who never got a bitter spirit about her. You know, what a witness, what a testimony. And you think about Naaman. Think about Naaman's wife. You think about, if it hadn't been for a little maid who never lost her faith, Naaman would never have come to know the Lord. Naaman's family would never have come to know the Lord. Oh, I tell you what. Romans 8:28. It's not just a verse that's read when someone's dying or someone's sick or some tragedy transpires in some life. Beloved, it's our reality every single minute of every single day. I was going to quote it, but let's read it. Romans 8:28. And we know, it's not speculation, it's not something that we think could be. We know. It's an absolute. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God. Now, it doesn't say all things are good. It doesn't say all things are going to feel good. It doesn't say all things are going to be happy and going to be good and we're just going to laugh through life and we're never going to have tears fall. We're never going to have broken hearts. We're never going to have broken bodies. We're never going to have griefs. We're never going to have that which causes us to fall on our face before God and just let the tears flow because we don't know anything else to do. Don't know anything else to say. But yet we know that all things work together for good. To them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. Do you realize this about the little maid? Way back when the Syrians came in and rousted her village and destroyed her home, and carted her away, God's purpose was already at work. God was already working out His plan. God's will was already in effect. Beloved, the same is true for for our trials, our tribulations, our situation. We don't know how it's all going to work out. Sometimes I kind of flip-flop. Sometimes I wish I did. And there's other times I'm glad I don't know how it's all. God just tells us, trust Him. Big lesson from the little maid. Bad things can happen. Hard knocks can come. Things we don't understand. Things we'd give everything we ever possessed or could possess not to happen. But they do. God's got His will and purpose for it. And it's a purpose of love. It's a purpose of working His goodness in our lives some way, somehow. Even if we get to glory. And I think that's going to be a good part of what heaven's about. God's going to allow us to know so many things in this life that right now we just don't know. Right now we can't know. And maybe right now we couldn't bear to know. But beloved, God's still on His throne. He's still working His will and purpose. And it's good. God is good. And He's good even when we're going through something bad. Something hurtful. Something grievous. And we never know how God may use one of us as He used the little maid. You know, if you go through something and God brings you to someone because you're going through something and you get a chance to tell them about Jesus and you go on the way the Lord would have you to go, they go on in their lives and one day you meet them on the streets of gold in glory. Won't it be worth it all? Wouldn't it be worth it all? Oh, beloved, God help us. Big lessons from a little maid. May we not forget them. May God help us.